Episode of the Squawker Talker is sponsored by BetOnBrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets, and offers. Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit matched when you use the promo code Squawker60. Just visit BetOnBrazil.com and enter the promo code Squawker60 when you deposit, and we will match your deposit up to £60. Also, look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. Bet on Brazil is for over 18s only. Betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly.
Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and joining me today are three guests. We've got Kadeen Simmons from The Morning Star.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, thanks. How are you?
Not bad. Thank you for coming in. Obviously, it's been a great weekend of European football in Champions League and Europa League, and joining me to discuss that as well is Ollie Young-Miles from Squawker. How are you doing, Ollie?
I'm good. How are you, mate?
I'm not bad. And George Ellick is back as well.
Hi, Greg.
Hello. You hosted your first Squawker Football IQ podcast this week, didn't you?
Yeah, I've spent a bit of time in this room in the last week. So give it a listen if you're interested in kind of the analysis side of football.
And who did you have on this week?
Ben Mayhew, who's at Experimental361 on Twitter, who does lots of really fun graphics and the like for kind of all EFL football. So I definitely recommend giving him a follow and listening to the pod.
Fantastic. And just before we kick into this pod, you're going to be back in a couple of weeks, aren't you, to do another?
So back in 2 Wednesdays' time, which will be more of a panel show. And then we've got a very special guest coming in. Well, I don't want to build up too much, but that'll be for the January transfer window. So
exciting.
That's a bit of a clue.
Well, look forward to that. Anyway, on to pressing concerns. The Champions League, the group stage finally finished this week. And I want to ask the pod, which team impressed you most? I'm going to come to you first, Kadeem.
This sounds so cliche, but it's got to be Dortmund. Very young side, very tough group as well, and not only did they hold their own, they basically scored goals for fun. And I think, you know, a few years ago under Klopp, Dortmund were like the in team. All my days, you know, everyone's a Dortmund fan, let's go down to Dortmund. They kind of trailed off a bit, but this year they are now once again the in team, and I think the performances in Champions League have shown that.
They're a bit suspect defensively, but they can outscore anyone. I think they broke the record, actually.
Yeah, I think 21 goals. And yeah. You know, that was most of it about Marco Reus, who's now back as well. So, yeah, they're a very, very dangerous team this season.
Ollie, anyone that you see that you fancy above Dortmund?
It's been quite an interesting Champions League, I think, so far, because, you know, the last few years have been dominated by Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid. I think they've all shown that they've got weaknesses this year, so it seems a bit more open this time around. I think one team that's sort of gone under the radar a little bit is Juventus. They top their group with Sevilla. And they're sort of just chugging along quite nicely, and I think they're looking quite well placed to enjoy a run like they did a couple of years ago when they reached the final.
Do you think any players out there, a bit like Gary Neville in 1998, was it? We go, oh, not Juventus. Oh, anyone that's going to be fearing them as the team to not want to face?
They top their group, so Real Madrid. I think Zidane said he didn't want to play against them. Obviously, he's got history there as well. They're a team that's built around a core of players that have been together for a long, long time. And they've refreshed that with, you know, two or three very good signings as well. So they're going to be, you know, last four team, I think.
We've heard Dortmund, Juventus. Anyone that's caught your eye, George?
I think it has to be Monaco. I think they won their group in the kind of manner that you'd expect a team who is expected to dominate their group to do so. They've got some seriously impressive players in their team. I think Fabinho looks absolutely superb in that midfield role, that central midfield role. Thomas Lemar obviously off the left, and Bernardo Silva is a player who's really caught the eye. And that Spurs game in Monaco, where they sent Spurs packing out the Champions League, he was really impressive, and that was as good a performance I've seen from a young attacking player in a long time. And their league form is to match. You know, we talk about Dortmund, but they're not doing it in the Bundesliga, which has got to be a concern. Whereas, you know, Monaco are scoring goals for fun as well in Liga. So there'll be a team who I think a lot of teams won't want to face in this next round, a certain banana skin, definitely.
Following on quite nice from that, how would we rank the four English clubs and how they got on in the Champions League? Ollie, what do you reckon?
Well, Tottenham are propping up the four, I think. You've got to flip, you know, it's Leicester or Arsenal for the top spot, I think, you know, considering they both finished first. I'd be tempted to go Arsenal in first place, actually, just because they had, you know, a European giant alongside them in their group. Obviously, Leicester, did remarkably well to, you know, in their first ever season. I think they won their first four games, didn't they?
Mm.
Obviously, the 5-0 capitulation in the last game aside, they did remarkably well, really. But I just think Arsenal, you know, it's everyone always bangs on about, oh, they finished fourth in the league and they finished second in their Champions League. And this year they've sort of taken that next step and finished top of their group, which I think is, you know, pretty impressive.
Dean, do you think that loss to Portland, they're in MLS, what am I talking about? To Porto in their final game for Leicester, do you think that kind of it puts a mark against their Champions League campaign? Because they sacrificed a lot in the league to get those results. So maybe having rested players for the match at the weekend, it's kind of showing that maybe their previous performance in the Champions League might have been a bit fake to some extent.
I think down the line, like a few years down the line, you look back at it and go, well, you know, they done so well and then lost to Porto. But I think Leicester in a really rare position. They done what most teams would do. You know, you top the group, game to spare. You rest the players for the Premier League game over the weekend. What's quite strange is that they're in a relegation battle. So the rest of the players kind of made even more sense. I don't think it leaves a mark in it because I think they really had to. I think it would have been such a kind of a case of bad luck if they'd gone into that game against Porto, played their starters, and then lost like Mahrez or Vardy to injury. So I think they've done the right thing, and you know, you look back at it and go, always play your strongest team in Champions League, but no one really does that, especially game 5 and game 6. So I think they've done the right thing.
Fair enough. And in terms of Man City, George, do you think that, I guess they're kind of mid-table in Ollie's ranking there. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think if you're taking the whole campaign in, you'd have to put Leicester and Arsenal first. But then at the same time, City probably came in with the performance of the whole round, I'd say, with their backs to the wall, needing result against Barcelona 1-0 down at home, to come back and win that 3-1 was an unbelievable effort. And when you look back at this round of fixtures together, that's probably the most impressive performance of the lot. And we haven't seen that much that's been too good from Pep's City in recent weeks, in the last couple of months. So that really does stand out, and it's easy to forget that. They've done well to qualify from the position they were in. So I think it is more positive than negative for City.
And Kevin De Bruyne was one of the players that really stood out in that game. But I want to ask you, who are your players of the competition so far, Kadeem?
I've really enjoyed watching Moussa Dembélé from Celtic. Simply because, you know, Celtic have pretty much already won the league. So it was a case of, can this team turn up in the Champions League? And okay, they've gone out, but I think the game against City, Dembélé kind of showed that he, you know, he's not just a hot prospect in Scotland, he's a hot prospect around the world.
Yeah.
And he took his goals well, and you know, there's a lot of talk, are Liverpool going to take him? Or, you know, I think that game proved that he can do it on the big stage, Champions League, Premier League opposition, where, you know, people are expecting Celtic to get trounced 5-6-0. So no, for me, it's Dembélé.
Fair. George, who's your player of the tournament so far?
Going to go for an Argentinian player called Leo Messi. I don't know if you've heard of him. I think when he scored 10 goals in 5 Champions League games, it deserves to be applauded. You know, and we look at their group now and mention Gladbach and Celtic, but you know that
you can only beat what's put in front of you.
I think both teams. I think Celtic certainly impressed in certain games. Mention Gladbach seemed to fall apart, but you know, scoring at that rate in the most elite European competition there is, it's a sign he's still the player that, if anyone had any doubts, he's not the goal scorer he used to be. I think that's a sign that he certainly is.
Mm-hmm. Ollie, who's your player of the tournament so far?
I don't know if he's the player of the tournament, but I love watching Aubameyang. I think he's sorry. Should I go again?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love watching Aubameyang. I think you know, he's obviously, you know, the spearhead of Dortmund's attack. They got 21 goals in the group stage, which is, you know, pretty ridiculous, really. And I think he's arguably the most exciting number nine in world football. He's obviously got that explosive pace that we all know about, but he's a very, very good finisher as well. And he links the play very well. I think that's sort of underappreciated sort of part of his game that he does really well. You know, he's got a good understanding with Marco Reus and Ousmane Dembele. So I'd say him, and also George has touched upon it already with Monaco. You know, a lot of their players impressed me, but I really liked Thomas Lemar. I was at the Tottenham game against Monaco, the first leg, and he came on and completely changed the game. They had an injury, I can't remember who went off. He came on and he was just absolutely brilliant. You know, for a 19, 20-year-old kid who cost, I think, $3 million from Cannes last year. I mean, they're going to make an absolute killing on him when they sell him. So, yeah, probably those two I've been most impressed with.
Nice. Well, we've heard who the players that impressed you, the teams that impressed you. cutting away all the kind of positive and getting down to the real nitty gritty, who do you think is going to win it, George?
I think that Juventus have a great chance. As Ollie's already said earlier, they went about their business with kind of no frills. It's a difficult group. That Sevilla, obviously, are a very difficult team to play against. They were aided by a red card in the second fixture there. But they've scored in all competitions this season. They've scored in all but two of their games. So when it gets down to competition football and knockout football, where away goals are so important, that's going to be a huge thing for them. Mm. Obviously, the next round draw is very important. If they did draw Real Madrid, it'd be very unlucky. But they certainly have the tools. They have the goal-scoring Higuain. They've got the players in midfield now. Pjanic starting to play. I think they're a better team than they were when they got to the final a couple of years ago, and I don't see any reason why they should fear any of the other teams in Europe. So I think they're certainly a team that'll go far.
Dean, we've heard you. You like Dortmund, like look at them, but do you reckon they can go all the way? And if not, who? Who do you reckon can?
I don't think they will, and I think it's the team that was in the group, Real Madrid. I know no one's, you know, ever been able to retain it, but there's just something about this Real Madrid team, and I think it kind of stems from Sergio Ramos, who, this sounds really strange, one of my favourite players to watch, simply because he's a really good defender. But he had this really amazing habit of scoring 90th minute headers. I don't understand how he does it, but
he's one man comeback, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that he's done it, you know, so many times now that it's part of the play he is. And, you know, if they need a late goal, don't even, you know, long ball tactics, just get a corner, Ramos header, goal. It's so predictable. Yeah, you can't stop it. So, and you know, Gareth Bale to come back as well, even though it depends how he returns from his injury, he'll be fresh, if that makes sense. And having someone like that come back towards the end of the season could make a massive difference.
Maybe very, very Zidane in the way that he's going to kind of get these great achievements while not maybe, you know, dominating teams and pulling them completely apart. So yeah, it'd be very interesting to see that. Ollie, who do you think is going to be the team to win it at this stage?
I'm going to go with Bayern Munich because they've got Don Carlo. He loves winning it. He's won three Champions Leagues. And they're not, well, obviously they're second, I think, in the Bundesliga at the moment. But they're, you know, under Pep, they pretty much wrapped up the title by now. You know, he's not a great league manager. He's worked for, you know, the biggest clubs in the world. He's worked at Juventus, Milan, Chelsea, PSG. And he hasn't won that many league titles, but he has a habit of always taking his team to that stage in the Champions League. And obviously Pep was unable to get Bayern beyond the semi-finals. He got them to three in a row. But I think with Carlo in charge, I think they can, you know, bridge that gap and sort of win their first one since beating Dortmund 3 years ago.
There's some interesting stats to kind of back up all of those claims. No side has conceded fewer goals in the group stage this year than Juventus. They've both got two with Atletico and Copenhagen. Bayern have created the most chances in the group stage this season in Champions League. And Real Madrid, by drawing against Dortmund in the last group stage game, equaled their best ever unbeaten run of 34 games in all competitions, a record previously set by Leo Beenhakker. So they're all definitely in the running. They've got some very impressive numbers going on behind the scenes. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. Another competition which wrapped up its group stage this week was obviously the Europa League, with Southampton going out after not quite managing to get the result they needed. They only needed a clean sheet and a draw to actually get through, and it just didn't happen for them in the end. Meanwhile, Manchester United are through after beating Zorya Luhansk away 2-0. They're kind of looking like favourites according to numbers. They have made and completed the most passes per game in the Europa League group stages this season, and only Mainz have created more chances in the Europa League than Man United. They're the front runners, aren't they, George?
Yes, definitely. I think Mourinho's his feelings towards his competition have probably changed in the last few months, as it's become fairly obvious he's not going to be challenging for the Premier League. So suddenly this is one of his best chances of silverware, and his team selections have reflected that as well, with a very strong team put out yesterday. I think that one of the English teams will win it. I think that Spurs' performance against Cisca was evidence to show that their team can still dispatch the kind of quality that you normally see in the Europa League. With United's team they put out yesterday as well, and with Sevilla going through, there's a chance actually for someone else to win it for once. I'd be pretty confident that even if we don't see an English Champions League winner, I think we're probably going to see an English Europa League winner.
Kadeem, we saw Liverpool get to the final last season in the Europa League. Do you think, we always rate the English clubs as having a great chance because they've got a great squad, but do you think that Spurs, United, once the season draws on, the business end, as they always say, creeps in terms of the title race and getting the top four, do you think they're going to care enough to actually commit to winning the Europa League?
I don't want to jump too far ahead because, you know, it's Spurs United on Sunday, but I think if United lose that, their chances of finishing in the top four are quite slim. And I think what you will see is, even though United will keep chugging along in the Premier League, there will be a real emphasis on we need to win the Europa League, because not just for financial reasons, United need to get back into Champions League. And if the Europa League is the only way they're going to do it, Jose will make sure that they win it. So, I think, you know, like everyone says, you know, the England teams are the best, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But this United team are literally a Champions League team in the Europa League. And it's quite unfair on the other teams, you know. You can't spend 89 million on a player and then play him in the Europa League. You know, there were all those jokes about it, but you saw the team United put out last night, and you was like, this is like champ football manager. It's just it's not fair. So yeah, I think that would be a massive difference, having those kind of players available.
I mean, that brings us nicely on to the game of the week, kind of call it, which is Man United versus Tottenham. And as Kadeen kind of alluded to there, maybe United might have one of the best 11s on paper, but the balance maybe still isn't quite yet there, Ollie. And when you look at the table, it's going to be sixth hosting fifth. But is there a sense that there's maybe more than just a single league position splitting these two teams?
Well, there's 6 points. So even if United win, they're still in the same position. But, I mean, both sides are still... They're sort of had slow starts to the season. They're sort of clicking now. So it's quite a good time for them both to play each other. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, the tactical battle sort of plays out. I think Mourinho sort of stumbled upon... I can't say a winning formula because they haven't been winning, but...
A drawing formula.
Yeah. I think that there were signs against Everton that they're sort of finally starting to click into gear, which, you know, shock horror, like, is because Mkhitaryan's in the team, which we've been banging on about all season. Why is he not playing?
And what a masterstroke, signing the Bundesliga player of the season.
I mean, yeah.
The things you find on the back of a sofa. It's amazing.
So surprising that, you know, he's good enough for Premier League. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Mkhitaryan, I think the problem was they spent so much money on Pogba, and Ibrahimovic was such a marquee signing. Mm. He just sort of got sidelined a little bit, and sort of shoehorning all three of them into the team at the same time, I think Jose was like, well, if I'm going to drop one of them, he's probably going to complain the least out of all of them.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why he's, you know, sort of taking his time. But yeah, he's shown everyone what he can do. And it'll be interesting. Him against Danny Rose is quite a good battle to look out for.
In the past, we have talked about Mourinho having a problem of almost having too many cooks in his team. George, do you think there is an issue that they kind of can't play with both Pogba and Mkhitaryan being the focal points?
I don't think there's any issue with playing Mkhitaryan. I think there is an issue with Pogba. There shouldn't be a problem with them playing together because they're two fantastic players. I think Pogba's form has gone in a weird wave this season. Early on, he was trying to do a lot on his own, trying to beat players when there's passes on. He wasn't really doing it. And then when he kind of came into a more reserved role, he then began to play the ball simpler and get into shooting positions and space ahead. And then yesterday against Zoya and also against Everton, he was back to... I mean, it's almost quite selfish in a way, and I think that's an issue. There are so many good players in that team who Pogba should be bouncing off rather than kind of almost weakening them in a way.
Weakening himself as well. You look at what was...
Absolutely weakening himself. Like, there's so many times. Last night was a perfect example. About four or five times Pogba had a very simple pass on, and he was reluctant to play that simple pass because he wanted to do something a bit more outlandish. And then as soon as he realised there was nothing on, he tried to play it and would lose the ball very cheaply in possession. And for, you know, a world record signing, you can't be doing that. It's that simple. Mm. And so Mkhitaryan coming in should actually take some of the creative responsibility away from Pogba and allow him to play his game normally, which is keep it simple and find pockets of space in which he can then use his incredible pace and power and ability to exploit. So if there is a problem, I think it's down to Pogba not performing his job as well as he should be doing, because there shouldn't be an issue, no.
I mean, Kadeem, Pogba is a fantastically beautiful footballer to watch in terms of how he dribbles and takes the ball forward. But do you think there's a sense that it's the price tag? It's maybe the criticism of people saying he hasn't got enough goals and assists to justify it. Do you reckon that might be playing on his mind, making him try and overplay to some extent?
Yeah, quite probably. You know, if you're going to cost 89 million, then every single time you get the ball, you kind of want to see, you know, 89 million worth flicks, tricks and all stuff like that. And I think... it was very interesting. I saw a video yesterday of Pogba, Lingard and Sam Johnston from the 2011 youth team, which is actually one of my favourites. Morrison, Will Keane, Michael Keane. I can go on and on. But it was quite interesting watching the three of them sit there, and you kind of do forget that Pogba was a United boy, you know, didn't grow up in Manchester, but, you know, he kind of has that Manchester DNA in him, and you kind of feel like there's a conflict sometimes where he feels like he's part, you know, he's come home. Mm. But he's also come home and cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, like you said earlier, he he should be keeping it simple, but he's trying so hard. And it's like, the keeping it simple is when he remembers, actually, I'm home, you know, I've got Lingard around me, Sam Johnson's on the bench, or, you know, he's around and stuff like that. You've got these kind of players. But then it's also like, I'm no longer playing up front with Roy Keane and Morrison. I'm playing with Mkhitaryan and Ibrahimovic. And I kind of feel like there's a constant battle in his head. And you can see it when, like you said, the simple pass is there. And instead of playing it, he holds on to it. And then it's like, oh, no, what do I do now? Okay, go back to simple pass. Yeah. And it's like, no, we've seen the simple pass. We're going to cut it out and we're now going to counterattack. So, yeah, it's a real dilemma. And I think he's just trying to, I think it will come. And he's not a goal and assist person. He's kind of like the pass before the assist. So I'm not expecting him to hit, you know, double figures in goals and assists. And that doesn't make him a bad player because you can see the quality is there.
And, and you can also see the immense frustration on his face every time he does it as well. He knows. A couple of times he shot from like 40 yards yesterday and I went nearer the corner flag than the goal. And you can see on his face, he's thinking, why have I done that?
Yeah.
And why have I done that?
But he is still only 23, and I think people have already forgotten that he's still a young player. Absolutely. He's still learning his way. He's still getting a sense of where he should be at. But another player who's coming for a bit of criticism on the other side of this fixture in recent weeks has been Christian Eriksen. But he's starting to improve, isn't he? Or he's starting to show a bit more end product from what's happening in recently.
I think his performance against CSK was probably his best of the season. He finally sort of stepped up and played a really, really, you know, important role in Tottenham's win there. His chances created, it's never been an issue really. But against CSK, he had an extra zip to his passing. But I think the main thing for him has been goals. You know, that goal against Chelsea seemed to just, you know, take a weight off his shoulders. And he obviously got two more against Swansea. So he's got three in his last two Premier League games, which is massive for him. Those three goals are half his tally from last season. And before his goal against Chelsea, he got one in his last 21 Premier League games. So obviously,
with 62 shot attempts or something like that. Well, 64, I think, in the end.
I mean, yeah. Technically, he's a brilliant, brilliant footballer. He's very, very good. He's one of Tottenham's best players when he's on form. I think his issue is performing in the big games like the United game coming up and Chelsea. Even though he scored against Chelsea, he was partly culpable for their winner. He gave the ball away in midfield and they countered and scored. I think his issue, you know, he can be a bit of a flat track bully. He's very, very good against Swansea and CSK Moscow, but can he do it against Man United at Old Trafford? That's the big question mark that's sort of always been about Christian Eriksen. It's never been about his ability or his potential, but it's about, you know, providing those big moments in the big matches. So that's what we need to see from him. You know, can he be that player this weekend?
Another player who could return to fill a void which his absence has created is a Toby Alderweireld as well. Who's been much missed for Spurs. I know
hugely.
Spurs' records defensively has been pretty good, but having him at the back seems to make the whole team just play with a bit more confidence up front as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically Tottenham's answer to Bonucci. You know, he creates so many moves. You know, his crossfield passing is absolutely ridiculous. Obviously, last season he got a couple of assists for Dele Alli from playing those raked long passes. But he's the organizer of the back four as well. You know, Eric Dier is a very good young player, but I think it's been patently obvious that he's not a centre half. You know, he's been completely remoulded as a centre midfielder. And in the Champions League games in particular, he was dragged all over the place. Even against CSKA, for Jagoev's opener, he was nowhere to be seen. He didn't read the danger, whereas Toby Alderweireld would have. Yeah, I mean, we all know what would happen. it was interesting. I mean, on Wednesday night or Tuesday night, whenever we played, Toby Alderweireld coming on was the biggest sort of cheer reverberating around Wembley, because everyone knows that he is, perhaps with the exception of Harry Kane, Tottenham's main man. So having him back, getting those 30 minutes under his belt will be, you know, very important this weekend.
One recent fixture for Spurs where Alderweireld's absence was greatly missed was against Chelsea. And one of the performances Chelsea put in recently to kind of put their claim on the title as potential title winners. And if you do look at the stats since October the 1st, when they moved to this 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1 formation, whatever you want to call it. They've played 8 games, won 8, scored 22 goals, conceded just 2. No side has scored more Premier League goals since October the 1st than Chelsea. They're going to run away with the title this rate, aren't they, Kadeem?
Probably. But at the same time, you know, you see this so often, a team jumps ahead and then all of a sudden, not even injury, they kind of just get complacent. And I think that's probably Chelsea's biggest worry right now, is about not getting complacent, because the no Europe, The only thing they've got left now is the FA Cup, and they'll probably go far in that as well. But they are in such a prime position to just keep chugging along, winning games. So yeah, as long as they don't get complacent, right now I can't see a winner other than Chelsea.
I mean, West Brom do this in their current form look like a team that will punish complacency as well. I mean, they scored one more goal than this expensively assembled Starfield Man United team this season in the league. Tony Pulis, he's not really taking any prisoners anymore, is he?
He's not. It's been a very good couple of weeks for West Brom. A note of caution on them, though. Their performances this season, kind of when you get down to nitty-gritty, the data isn't actually that much better. I think they're half a goal ahead of their expected goals so far on the average from last season. They've had very easy fixtures and they've got a tough run coming up, so it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them start to slip back down the table to where we'd expect to see them. And I mean, a word on Chelsea is that I think the fixtures have gone a very good way for them. I think they went on this blistering run, and then it was quite timely they had the tough games of Spurs and City, because I mean, they had to, you know, they're galvanised into ensuring it would continue, and now suddenly clear at the top of the table. They've got this easy December that everyone's talking about, and that is when they've got something to lose. And it's very rare in the Premier League, as we've seen in the past, for a team to kind of run away with it around Christmas time. So it wouldn't surprise me if it wasn't as easy as it looks on paper, let's just say that. But it looks like a fantastic month for them.
The games will be coming thick and fast during the winter break. I say the winter break, but England doesn't have one, but when everybody else is taking
European winter break.
European winter break, indeed. But how do you think they can actually stop this 3-4-3, Ollie? Is there a weakness in this system that you've seen?
I think there has been signs in the last two games that you can get at Chelsea when they're playing this way. Let's be honest, obviously beating City away is a massive, massive result for Chelsea, but De Bruyne scores that, you know, that open goal at 1-1 could be a completely different game. City had a lot of chances. Aguero had two or three that he passed up. Courtois was excellent as well. And Chelsea just sort of hit him on the break with two excellently taken goals. It could have been a completely different story, but Chelsea, you know, are in this sort of run of form where they're grinding out results when they need to. Tottenham as well had them completely penned back for the opening, you know, 44 minutes until Pedro scored in that game as well. So I think other teams can take heart from how Tottenham played in that first half and how many chances City created throughout the game, you know, the game the Etihad as well. The issue is, you know, how do you counter that width that they have? And they can sort of change it up as well. Hazard wasn't in the game as much as usual at the weekend, but they still, Alonso got an assist. Moses is still, there's always someone that's sort of, I mean, Costa's been doing it all season, but Pedro can chip in, Moses can chip in, and Fabregas was brilliant as well last week. You know, he sort of came out of nowhere, really. No one was expecting him to just slot in so seamlessly for Matic. So they've got their sort of match winners back, Chelsea. It is difficult. It's difficult to see. I don't know if West Brom are the team to end it, but I think over Christmas we'll see how much they are the favourites, because Conte's never really been in this position before, and he's going to have to rotate at that time of the season, and he hasn't really needed to so far.
Just a word on Fabregas, because it's irked me in the last few months how people almost talk about him as like a joke figure and forget that he was, 50 months ago, in probably the top five best players in the league. He was brought into Chelsea and basically completely changed them and made them into title winners. He had a poor season last season, but at the same time, I don't think there's anyone in the league or even in Europe who's as good at threading the ball through to a striker as he is.
Pirlo-esque in some of his
absolutely. And you've got to remember that Conte was a person who brought Pirlo to Juventus and made him an absolute world-class deep-line playmaker at the age of kind of 35. Obviously, he can't run, which is a bit of a shame, but as Conte showed with Pirlo, there is room for a team who dominate teams, especially weaker teams like Chelsea do. There's room for a player like him, and I think it'd be a real shame not to see him play more, because he's a fantastic talent and he's still got it.
It always reminds me of that scene from Goal where Santiago Nunes is told to stop dribbling and pass, the ball is faster than you. And with Fabregas, the ball is always faster than him, so that's definitely his strength. On to Liverpool versus West Ham, another big Sunday fixture this weekend. West Ham have conceded 13 goals in their last four games in all competitions. Bilic blamed a lack of intensity in his post-match press conference after being absolutely destroyed by Arsenal in the Premier League, and he faces one of the league's most intense sides, actually one of the most intense sides in all of Europe at present. Liverpool are the Premier League's top scorers and the most creative side in the league. Does Bilic have any hope of a result, Kadeem?
I detest talking about West Ham right now for a number of reasons. Can't stand the stadium.
You know what? I think every single week someone says that.
It's not what, but I think it's you know, it's not the stadium as a fan, it's the stadium as a journalist. I just think that place is just awful. You know, you kind of, you know, bit behind the scenes. You can't turn up to a game as a journalist and the club ran out of programmes. That's embarrassing. You can't run out of food either. So I'm not saying I want West Ham to get relegated, but if Liverpool put five past them, I would not bat an eyelid. And that sounds really harsh. And I'm sorry, West Ham fans, but you just can't. Oh, you're so depressing right now. And no, I think Bilic is in deep, deep trouble. I think I said around September, do not be surprised if Bilic goes before Christmas. I think the owners at West Ham kind of want a big name to fill that stadium. And I think, you know, last season was just, I wouldn't say it's a fluke, but, you know, Payet and his last-minute free kicks and stuff like that, I think kind of overshadowed a lot of their problems. Mm. And, you know, the chickens have come home to roost this season. In the summer, the transfer policy was awful. And kind of, you go through that side right now and you're just like, is there any actual quality in that side apart from Payet? And, no, I think Liverpool would just, even though Liverpool just come off the back of that really weird 4-3 defeat, I think they get back on track this weekend because West Ham right now have no, they just look completely devoid of anything.
Mm. Despite not looking even capable of doing much at home a lot of time this season, you do look at the stats and only West Ham have conceded more goals through their own errors than Liverpool. West Ham conceding 6, Liverpool 4. So coming off the back of that Bournemouth defeat, especially if Joel Matip misses the game, could Liverpool be on for another kind of topsy-turvy, potentially disappointing fixture at home in front of their own fans, Ollie?
That was the kind of game that was sort of characterised Klopp's first season at Liverpool. You know, they were always seemed to be involved in these topsy-turvy matches that sort of veered from one end to the other. And this season, they've been a lot more solid generally. You know, they've, in the last sort of couple of months, they haven't conceded many. They haven't, you know, teams are finding it difficult to carve out chances against them and even get shots away. But without Matip at the weekend, they just, I mean, they looked all at sea really defensively. It was like Dejan Lovren 2014 version again. Loris Karius was all over the place. So they need Matip back desperately. West Ham, you know, if you're missing your star defender, West Ham probably isn't the worst team for that to happen against because
Andy
they
Carroll,
have no striker.
Carroll versus Lucas could be interesting.
Okay, I'll take that back. Carroll get a hat-trick. But no, I mean, Liverpool, they need to turn it around this week, and it was obviously a bit of a freak result last week. But that did hamper their title challenge, really. You know, especially, you would have thought as well, playing the day after Chelsea had won, that they would have seen that game out, you know, racing into a 2-goal lead and then going 3-1 up as well. They need to tighten up again. But yeah, I mean, as Kadeem said, West Ham are all over the place at the moment. Arsenal are in very good form. Sanchez was brilliant last week, but losing 5-1 at home, you know, is never a good sign. And they're just leaking goals for fun at the moment. So yeah, Liverpool should be back on track, I think.
Is it just a case of playing Joel Matip? I mean, there's rumours that Liverpool won't be in for Virgil van Dijk in January. What can Jurgen Klopp do to make sure that their shot of glory this year isn't wasted?
Whilst, you know, Liverpool's form without Matip is obviously really, you know, concerning for them, it's a small sample size. And I think whilst he's been great for them, it's too easy just to say without Matip they're going to struggle. And with it, when he's back, it's all going to be great. Mm. Certainly, the lack of Coutinho is also an issue. Last weekend as well against Bournemouth, I thought that they lacked that kind of, whilst they scored 3 goals, they only created 9 chances, which was the second least of any game this season in the Premier League. They've created over 20 chances in 4 games, which shows you just how kind of much they're missing him.
And maybe without that kind of, deterrent.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Lallana came on, which will be a huge plus to them. I do think this is a potential upset, which might surprise people. I think Klopp will obviously give them a rocket, which should mean the intensity is back. But I think with Carroll back, having Andy Carroll in your team with someone who's got the delivery of Dimitri Payet, and also Lanzini's also can put a fantastic ball in as well. I think
he's up there for chances created from his own half this season.
So I think that alone is 3 players who will score you goals and will ensure you don't get dragged down to the relegation battle, so long as Carroll stays fit. And Liverpool aren't the best at defending set pieces at the best of times, even with Matip. So it'll be, I think if Bilic doesn't say to them, right, you guys get the ball in Andy's head, then he's made a mistake, because that's how they'll be able to feature in the game. And I thought they played all right against Arsenal for the first 70-odd minutes.
I must admit, before Sanchez got his first goal, I thought that was going to tip the other way, because the momentum just wasn't
absolutely
there.
They played really well. So maybe the tide in a 5-1 defeat is turned.
maybe. We're going to quickly move on now to the rest of the games this weekend. Saturday's early kickoff is Watford versus Everton, as the Hornets have lost two in a row. Everton without a win since October. So, I mean, is it just a case of who wants it more, as the cliche goes? What's going to happen, Kadeem?
This Everton I did think Everton would beat United. I predicted 2-0 Everton, and I was really wrong about that. I think Koeman's still trying to work out what best to do with his team, and I think, you know, the prime example of that is Ross Barkley. You know, again, you spoke about Pogba earlier being 23. I believe Barkley's 23 as well, so Barkley's still young. He's just been around for ages. So yeah. I think part of their problem is that going forward, at times, Lukaku is totally isolated, and they do not.
Balassi's again, out now as well.
Yeah, which is a massive loss. And it's quite surprising, because there's a lot of pace through that team, excluding like Gareth Barry. But you know, down the flank, they're actually really pacey. So I don't understand how they can't support Lukaku quick enough. So Watford are a really interesting side as well. I actually think Watford might win this, maybe 2-3-1. I think, not because Everton will play badly, I just think Watford seem a bit more together at the moment. And I think it could just come down to which team are more composed. I think Watford might do this.
Well, composure might be an interesting one, because I think Watford lead the way for both fouls committed this season and cards picked up. So could be a bit of a battle.
Just something on the Balassi injury as well, as I think that's going to pave the way for Deulofeu to get probably his last chance, really, because Koeman, having put his faith in him at the beginning of the season, hasn't really given him much game time at all. And he's a player with such talent, and it's a real shame to see him not being able to break into that team. And Balassi's injury should, unless he chooses to play Morales and Lennon, which would be a massive kick, for Deulofeu, because he is someone who should be playing in that team, who should be improving them, and should be ably supporting Lukaku as well.
Another Spanish breakout star in the Premier League at present is Lucas Perez, who scored a hat-trick in the Champions League to secure Arsenal's passage through to the round of 16. Could he be the answer to making sure that the Gunners still have the firepower when Alexis Sanchez can't quite do it? Because he's basically been dragging them through a few games recently. The fluidity they had early in the season has dried up a little bit without Cazorla. Is Lucas Perez the answer, Ollie, against Stoke City this weekend?
I think Arsenal usually do quite well against Stoke City, so I think they'll get a win. Whether Perez is a long-term solution for them in attack, I'm not convinced.
The Spanish Jamie Vardy, don't forget.
Well, yeah, I mean, the English Jamie Vardy is struggling enough. So, you know, that comparison's sort of gone cold a little bit. But, yeah, no, I mean, he scored 3 goals from 3 shots, I think, in midweek, which is, I mean, 2 at tap-ins, but still he's in the right place at the right time. You know, that's encouraging and everything. But he's not going to get in ahead of Sanchez. He's not going to get in ahead of Giroud, I think, who's been very good this season, you know, albeit playing in a sort of bit part role for Arsenal. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, goals are a valuable commodity, and if he can provide some, then, you know, Arsenal have got a decent signing there.
Wilfred Bonny was seen as a player that could do similar for Stoke, and it's still not quite working for him yet, is it?
No, it's weird. Stoke's form has really improved in the last couple of months. It's kind of without their most important players. Arnautovic, Bonny, they're not having the impact they were having, well, certainly Arnautovic was having last season. Bojan's coming back from injury, but he hasn't really done that much either. It's falling to the likes of kind of Joe Allen and Diouf to pick them up. So that may be a good sign. That may mean that once these kind of elite players that they've got do click, I mean, with Shaqiri's having a very good season, but the other ones, when they do click, they'll move up to another gear. They're certainly going to provide a stern test, I'd have thought, to Arsenal. Should be a cracking game. And I think once Bonny does, he's certainly good enough to lead the line for them. And once he does start playing well, it should be exciting times.
There's that weird thing about Bonny, though, isn't it? That he might go to China next month.
Yeah.
There's a clause in his contract.
Yeah.
I mean, he just hasn't got going there. It seems like a bit of a weird move that all round, you know, having that clause in there. But
it's a shame as well, considering the player he was at Swansea. Like, it's kind of
so good there.
Yeah, it's kind of a loss to the Premier League to lose a player of his ability to kind of go a bit cold on us. But
yeah,
he also had a very barren start to his time at City as well. Yeah. So maybe it's just a case of
maybe he needs
in.
To be the main man. I think that's the main problem.
But I think he was for the first few weeks. It's just now his form has meant that Diouf's getting a run in the team, but.
Well, anyway, speaking of other stern tests, Burnley host Bournemouth in in a match that, I mean, to some extent, is this two teams that are kind of the evil twins of each other? They're both very organised, very collectively focused. They do a lot without the ball as well. Well, one of them does a bit more with it. But is it a case of, you know, Burnley and Bournemouth, they're kind of two sides of the same coin in terms of two kind of UK managers trying to get by with collective effort rather than individual quality?
Yeah, and I think they both kind of approach football in a very similar way. You know, both teams came up from the Championship and didn't spend, you know, bucket loads on new transfers. It kind of was like, you know, this is the team that got us here. We all know each other. We have that spirit, so we're going to keep going. So you have to applaud them at that. I think Bournemouth will be riding high from their victory over Liverpool. And I've seen Bournemouth a few times this season, gone down there, and that whole stadium is quite unique. And, you know, Eddie Howe has this real, it sounds strange, but it's a real family vibe to it. Bournemouth has a real family vibe when you go there, and you can see all the players, you know, they run for each other. And, you know, sorry to pull out all these cliches, but it's just true. You watch them and you go, yeah, this is the team that's together. They, you know, they just get on so well. So, yeah, I think both teams are very, very organised. But again, I think Bournemouth, especially after last week, probably will have that bit extra.
It's a little told part of the Eddie Howe story was when a couple of years ago he jumped ship from Bournemouth and went to Burnley and had 8 months there or whatever, and it didn't work out at all. So it'll be an interesting, I'm sure that'll give him a bit of spice to want to make sure he gets one over his old club, because not many people know that he actually has left Bournemouth and returned the prodigal
son. I totally
forgot.
Yeah.
One for Wikipedia fans to check out there on the old page. Swansea host Sunderland in a battle that will kind of be deciding who's going to be the worst team of the season, surely. Is David Moyes on the path to redemption, or is there any way back for Bob Bradley at all, Ollie?
Well, in terms of David Moyes, I think maybe we should give him a bit of credit. He's sort of masterminded three victories from four now.
Three wins in four games,
And they're suddenly looking like they're sort of getting back to where they were under Allardyce at the end of last season.
They've now levelled off the points tally that Derby had when they went down that disastrous season.
That's so important. Like when the team starts off that bad, everyone just goes, oh, they're going to be another Derby. As long as you do better than Derby, you're fine.
I think the thing with Sunderland is, though, you know, there's going to be four or five teams battling out. Sunderland have a genuine top-class goal scorer in their ranks, which the other teams don't
Premier
have.
Premier League great, you could say.
Yeah.
I would, 100% say that. Score more Premier League goals than Michael Owen. they have that, and that's such a huge advantage. If they can, you know, sort out their supply line to Defoe a little bit more, then they'll be, you know, they'll be maybe finish 17th again, do what they do every year. In terms of Swansea, I think last weekend was statistically one of the worst performances in Premier League history. I think they had one shot that wasn't on target. Yeah, a blocked shot, yeah. I mean, they were just, you would have thought for them as well, after their sort of crazy 5-4 win over Palace, that would galvanise them a little bit. But they, you know, they just turned up to Spurs and looked like, the worrying thing for them is it looks like they're not together, and there's no team spirit there. They've lost the heart of that team in Ashley Williams. They've lost Ayew, who was really crucial for them, Bonnie, as we mentioned. And they just haven't replaced those players. Gylfi Sigurdsson's the one star in that team, and there's nothing to play off him.
It's been a long time since Michy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And Sigurdsson isn't the player that you want. You know, he's a languid player who he's not going to grab a game by the scruff of the neck and force the issue unless it's all free kicks, basically.
He needs people working off him. Yeah. And there isn't anyone at Swansea who's doing that.
But you look at some of their players, like, you forget to have Llorente up front. Like, you look at that Swansea team and go, they've actually got a few decent players. Mm. They just...
Well, weirdly, Llorente, again, was always best when you have people running off him. So it's like they've got all these players that need other players to kind of do stuff for them.
Yeah, it's like they just try to just chuck players at the wall and say, which one stick? And so far, every single one just fallen to the floor. And yeah, they are in real trouble.
What do you expect when you buy the relegation curse that is Leroy Fert?
Oh, yeah.
It's strange, though, because Swansea transfer policy was sort of lauded for quite a long time. You know, they seem to strike gold in the market more often than not. And it seems like suddenly their philosophy has just sort of disintegrated. And basically for them, if they don't get Ashley Williams Mark II, they're down, I think. They need to buy someone, a dominant centre-half in January.
Well, speaking of dominant centre-halves, Curtis Davis is probably still the one man battle against relegation, still striving to save Hull City this season. They're going to be hosting Crystal Palace. And if we're talking about managers in trouble, Alan Pardew seems to be playing a bit of a dicey game at the moment. He gave his thumb up to Steve Parrish in the director's box after winning last weekend against Southampton 3-0. And then said after the match that, oh, thank you to Steve Parrish for trusting in me, because the other owners, they don't really know football, or words to that effect. George, what's he doing?
I think he's such a streaky manager and always has been, and that's because of things like that. He rules by emotion, I think, more than anything else. And normally those losing streaks at West Ham, at West Ham, at Charlton, they normally end in being sacked. At Newcastle, he actually had a kind of a renaissance of form before he was sacked, where he went 6 wins on the bounce and won Manager of the Month just before he went to Palace. And so maybe we're now seeing, after that win, the end of the winless run developing into something a bit better if he gets given the time. And going to Hull is probably the perfect game to do that. I'd expect them to win this. They've got so many good players. I mean, the likes of Zaha, Benteke. I mean, these are players punching who are just far better than anything Hull have to offer. Mm. I'm predicting a comeback for Pards at Palace. And definitely 3 points here, yeah.
Very nice, very nice. On Saturday, the late kickoff is Leicester City versus Manchester City. Two sides we've already talked about today on the podcast in terms of their European exploits. But this is really going to be the first league match where Leicester prioritised it over their European games. They rested some players in their defeat to Porto, while City also rested players with a few young players coming in. Obviously, Fernandinho and Aguero are going to be suspended, with Iheanacho probably going to lead the line after impressing against Celtic. Is this a bit of a foregone conclusion, Kadeem?
Yeah, I think, you know, Leicester better played midweek, but I just think their confidence is so low. That is right through the team. Jamie Vardy looks like just a complete shadow of what he was last season.
It's working hard, but just nothing's working for him.
He's always worked hard, but it seems this season he's working hard, but not to the same extent as he did last season. It's like he's a step slower and, you know, it's like he's given defenders that extra second to clear the ball, and Mahrez has been okay, you know, but it's, yeah, they try their best to prioritise this game, but I just can't see City not losing. Leicester just look like they're in real trouble, and everyone knew they weren't going to retain the league, but I don't think anyone expected them to be this bad.
Mm. We've seen Leicester get absolutely thumped by Liverpool and United this season. Is it a case of City just going to turn up, keep them at arm's length, and then just pick them apart?
Yeah, I think so. I can't really see. Leicester's Premier League form is just so poor. Maybe they need to play a game like this at home to try and galvanise them and kind of refine.
We all sound quite resigned by it, don't we?
Well, they need to get that. Maybe it's just
dream is over.
It's such a way to fall, and they're in free fall. And the thing is, once you know, you say that Vardy's not working as hard. He won the league last year. Like, where's the, you know, you can see in the Champions League what the goal is. Like, that's why they're galvanised. That's what they've got something to aim for. In the Premier League, it's like, well, we're probably not going to be here next season. If we get relegated, we still won the league last year. They're not going to take that away from us. It's just apathetic, basically.
Mm. Another side with perhaps not too much to fight for anymore this season is Southampton, who host Middlesbrough in another one of the Sunday kickoffs. Is this going to be a case of the midfield diamond versus the rough of Ita Karanka's team? Because they might, you know, keep the ball a bit, but I think they're really up there for tackles in the opposition's half, but I think they're still third from bottom for chances created. They're very dour, very cautious, very conservative team. But do you think with players like Adama Traore, they could still cause Southampton problems?
Yeah, I watched Borough on Monday night against Hull City, and I was actually really impressed with them. They sort of took that game by the scruff of the neck and dominated proceedings until last 15-20 minutes where Hull actually gave it a go. I think we all expected Borough to play like this. You know, they came up from the Championship with, you know, a fairly average goals for record, but a really impressive goals against one. You know, they kept, you know, the most clean sheets and conceded the fewest goals. So he sort of expected this from them. Mm. I think they've got enough star quality in there to stay up. I think Gaston Ramirez has been brilliant for them. You know, he's sort of bounced back from a dismal time at Southampton and become, you know, their focal point in attack. And Adama Traore is, you know, a very interesting player. He's very direct, quick, pacey, but he's lacking that end product at the moment. Hopefully that will come. In terms of Southampton, really, really disappointing for them on Thursday night. You know, having, you know, with Inter Milan propping up that group, you'd expect Southampton to go through, especially. And they were just so wasteful in the whole Europa League campaign. You know,
Charlie Austin is now injured as well.
Yeah, that's the issue for them. You don't know who's going to get their goals. You know, in the San Siro, they should have won that. They should have beaten Sparta Prague as well. Mm. And they've crashed out of, you know, a pretty poor group in a pretty you know, bog standard Europa League. There's not too many good teams in that competition this year, and they could have actually gone quite far in it. So they need to sort of, you know, revitalise themselves and go again in the Premier League, because they haven't been, you know, as impressive in the league as they have been the last couple of years either. So it's a big, big game for them actually this weekend.
What frustrates me about Southampton is that in a game like yesterday, which they needed a result, they haven't played their strongest team. You know, they left like the likes of Tadic on the bench, James Ward-Prowse on the bench as well. Whereas now, so if they'd got a result last night, they'd be still in the Europa League. They're now spending a whole season attempting to qualify for the Europa League. It just seems strange not to like put all your eggs in that basket now, because you're looking for your Europa League campaign, and now they're back to square one again. It just seems a shame to me.
I think it was weird yesterday. They could have gone into the game and drawn 0-0.
Mm.
And I think that having that sort of in the back of your mind, I think played on them, because they made a really, really slow start to that game.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Hapoel score with 10 minutes to go, and they're like, oh, great, you know, we need to get two goals.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that sort of galvanised them. I just think having that sort of in the background sort of, you know, played a part in them going out.
Mm. Well, to move on from the games, we're going to do a quick round of Would You Rather. Basically, I'm going to each ask you a question, and you're going to give me an A or B answer. So just on that note, would you rather be Leicester through to Champions League round of 16 and facing a potential relegation battle, or would you rather be Southampton stuck in mid-table without anything else to play for in Europe, Kadeem?
I'd rather be Leicester in the Champions League, I think. Even though they're in a relegation battle, I think they'll stay up somehow. But I think, you know, Champions League, they may never be here again. You kind of just, you know, you just go in, you enjoy it, and you know, it's the whole something to tell your grandkids when you're sitting on the sofa around Christmas. Oh, by the way, I played Real Madrid in the Champions League. It's like, oh my days. So yeah, I'd rather be Leicester.
Nice. Ollie?
Yeah, I'd rather be Leicester. Yeah, as Kadeem said, they might not be here again, they probably won't, so it's a big opportunity for their players to, you know, put themselves in the shop window maybe as well.
George?
Leicester, yeah. Champions.
The dream is still alive.
Champions League possibility, you know, without a doubt, yeah.
I'll keep keeping on the subject of Europe. Arsenal finished first, but they could have finished second. But unlike many seasons, it seems like, you know, finishing first, second, you're going to be drawn with a giant potentially anyway. So I want to ask you, would you rather have the potential to draw Bayern and Real Madrid or Barcelona and Juventus, George?
Bayern, Real Madrid, Barcelona. I would rather probably Barcelona or Juventus. I would say just about Barca is certainly there for the taking at the moment. And although I've been waxing lyrical about Juve, they still are they're still obviously beatable.
So George would have finished second place. He would have gone for second with Arsenal. Yeah. What about yourself, Ollie?
I would have finished second as well.
Wow.
Juventus and Barcelona. Juventus, I think Arsenal could get up. Barcelona maybe less so, but I think Bayern and Real, you know, are good enough to go on and win it. I think they're the two favourites, really.
Mikey. Kadeem?
Yeah, same. I think Arsenal seem to have this thing where they can match Barca for 90 minutes and then go to Nou Camp and Messi put four past them. So if they can, you know, match them for 90 minutes and then stop Messi from scoring four, you know, try and come down to like one or two, then, you know, they could nick it. And I think Juve, while they're defensively really good, I think Arsenal could probably match them and beat them as well. So, yeah, why finish second?
Fair enough. Going to move now to the Premier League. Ibrahimovic or Harry Kane, Kadeem?
I'm going to go Ibrahimovic. I have a slight problem with Harry Kane. Quite controversial, and I'm really sorry about this. But I think there's often times where if Spurs don't get going, he doesn't get going. And I think I was at the Bournemouth United game and Ibrahimovic didn't get going and then all of a sudden scored a goal. And don't get me wrong, Kane can do that as well. But I think Ibrahimovic had that bit more quality to him, you know, the whole bicycle kick from 40-50 yards, he doesn't really care, you know, if the ball's anywhere he will shoot and he couldn't quite often score. So yeah, I'm going to go for Zlatan, I'm afraid.
Ollie, you're going to dare to Zlatan or keep with Kane?
Keep with Kane. Mm-hmm. I actually disagree with Kadeem. I think he gets Tottenham going rather than the other way around. Without him, the attack doesn't function. I think we've seen how, you know, influential he is in that Spurs side. They couldn't score without him. Suddenly he's come back and got 7-8, I think. And his conversion rate this season is 30% compared to Satan's 17, so he's better.
George, would you have a Memphis Depay or Vincent Janssen? No, I'm Ibrahimovic or Kane?
I've got issues with both, but I think I would...
You've got to pick one, mate.
I think, yeah, no, I would go with Kane. I don't like players who try silly things on the pitch and then wave their arms around above their head when it goes wrong. I'd rather have a player who works hard for the team and can also finish. I'd like Harry Kane to stop shooting the whole time from 40 yards.
But I think he's only scored 2 goals from outside the box.
In the last 2 seasons, he had 62 or 63 shots from outside the box and scored 2. And considering how good a finisher he is, just stop it. And he did it. And for England in the Euros, I place that as the number one reason why why England was so poor.
Well, that's another pod for another time.
It was Tottenham's fault, wasn't it? According to Roy.
Well, we want stay or go for this one. So, Alan Pardew, stay or go, George?
Stay unless he doesn't beat Hull, and then go.
Ollie. Stay, comedy value.
Kadeem.
No.
Oh, contention in the room. We're going to move now to your game to watch across Europe this weekend. I want you to pick a game from outside the Premier League and tell us why it's worth our readers and listeners watching it. Kadeem.
I'm going to go with Rangers v Hearts. As I'm sure you all know, Hearts appointed Ian Cathro during the week, 30-year-old manager. I'm 27. I am so jealous that there's a man 3 years older than me managing a football club, albeit Hearts.
You brought up Football Manager earlier. It's very Football Manager, isn't it?
It really is. You know, when you start the game, it's like, you know, how old are you? It's like, oh, I can't get my real age in there. Let's just go 30, because that's what I'm closest to. So he's living that Football Manager dream right now. So I think it'll be quite an interesting game on that. That league is finished. Celtic are going to win it. So,
and Warburton's in for a little bit of criticism as well.
Yeah. You know, the whole Joe Barton thing just made no sense.
You mean Messi?
What a strange interview. But yeah, so no, yeah, I think that's probably the game I'll try and catch on Rangers v Hearts.
Nice. Ollie?
I'm going to go PSG v Nice in Ligue 1. Nice are top of the table. They're 4 points clear of PSG. And they've both got pretty much identical goal records. I think they've both scored 30.
And Balotelli's back as well.
Yeah, well, obviously that's the crowd pleaser as well if you don't watch French football. I think Nice have conceded 11 and PSG have conceded 10, so they're very evenly matched. Mm. And PSG need to win, basically. You know, Unai Emery's had a bit of a stuttering start, considering they'd won the title by now last season. So yeah, I'm going to go with that. Also, Malang Sarr, I hope, plays. He's a 17-year-old centre-back. I'd like to see how he does against Cavani. Mm. That'll be an interesting sort of individual battle.
Cyprian as well, a very good player in their midfield. Full of talent. We talked about Monaco earlier. Full of talent in Nice as well. George, what's going to be your game of the weekend?
My game is actually tonight. It's Frankfurt-Hoffenheim, so that's Friday night. So if you're listening on Saturday, I hope it was a good game.
it's not due to big up Hoffenheim, George.
I know. And the Bundesliga, I can't believe it. No, it's 6th plays 4th. Two teams who set up with 3 at the back. Play kind of a high intensity game. It should be a fascinating watch. Some players to look out for. There's Jesus Vallejo. My Spanish isn't very good. Who plays kind of on the left side of the back 3 for Frankfurt, who's on loan from Real. And then 2 Hoffenheim players, Niklas Schul, who is a 21-year-old centre back.
Giant, isn't he?
Absolutely huge, who's got a huge future. And then Sandro Wagner, who's the striker for Hoffenheim, who this week said he is the best striker that Germany have. So let's see if he lives up to his billing.
Very confident words there.
I'm pretty sure he was in the Germany under 21 team that thrashed England 4-0 when they had Özil, Boateng, Neuer. I think he was leading the line, so he's finally coming good.
In our final segment, we're now going to do a quick game of Squawker Versus. That's where we get our external guest to take on one of our in-house experts on 3 statty questions, and then the winner takes all, bragging rights and everything. Squawker are currently leading the series 2-1. They lost in the last game. It's Bleach Report, Gary Hayes there, getting one for the externals. So you could equalise if you win this, Kadeem.
Oh, no pressure. Thank you.
have you got your buzzers?
Yes, I do.
Oh, fantastic. I do not. In case you haven't heard this before, cheers. We have a bicycle bell and a big, like, horn thing, which is a bike horn. There we go. Is yours working, Ollie?
No.
There we go. Cool. So it's whoever buzzes in first gets to answer first. I'll begin. So, who has played the most long balls in the Premier League this season so far? Ollie.
Henderson.
Meant teams. Sorry. Let's again. Which team has played the most long balls in the Premier League so far this season? Kadeem.
Is it United?
Ollie.
I'll go Chelsea.
It's not, it's Everton. Ronald Koeman sending the ball high and wide up to his wingers to try and play Lukaku in. Next question. Which team have created the most chances in the Champions League but still failed to reach the round of 16 this season? I've got four potentials for you. A, Lyon. B, Spurs. C, Legia Warsaw. Or D, Besiktas.
Lyon.
Ollie wins. You didn't even get the guy. Sorry, man.
I was like, there's four choices. I was like, oh, crap.
It's 1-0. This one's also multiple choice as well. So, you know, hold off until you hear all the options and then, you know, we can have a fair fight at it.
If you know, we go for it.
Four players have scored three goals in November in the Premier League. That means that they're all joint scorers for the month. But which of these four scored the most goals per 90? So A, Harry Kane. B, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. C, Victor Anichibi. Or D, Sergio Aguero.
Anichibi?
It's not.
Harry Kane.
It's not, it's Zlatan. But somehow, Squawker win 1-0.
Oh, so, I was going to go with Zlatan. Oh, I should have did it to Zlatan.
It's a 3-1 lead in the series to Squawker. Do join us again next week to see who can maybe close that gap from the externals. But anyway, that's all we've got time for today on the Squawker Talker. Kadeem, sports editor of the Morning Star, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. Ollie, thank you once again.
Cheers, Greg.
George, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
And thank you, listeners, dear listeners, for joining us as well. Do tune in next week, Monday. Nick will be back with another Squawker Talker podcast. And then Rory Briggs returns with a very insightful, interesting chat in his one-on-one show with Dominic Bliss, talking about the great Exeter Gran Torino manager, Erbstein, and the book that he wrote and some of the other books he's going to recommend you read as well. Join us again soon, and thanks for listening.